Today we're going to be discussing a bit of a sensitive, if not taboo, topic, being laid off. Layoffs are an unfortunate and oftentimes confidence-crushing circumstance for an individual to be in. But then, when you take a global pandemic, the uncertainty of the economy, and on top of that, losing your job, I can't imagine the stress, panic, and fear that so many people have experienced around the world for the last 18 months. According to an article on Reuters, total layoffs in 2020 for the United States alone hit a record high of 2.3 million people. That's a 289% surge compared to 2019. Globally, the International Labor Organization estimates between 81 to 114 million jobs were lost in 2020 due to the pandemic. Needless to say, layoffs, furloughs, or severe reduction in working hours were a common occurrence in 2020 and 21. And you probably know within your own network or circle of friends someone who unfortunately went through this exact situation. And that brings me to today's guest, my friend Kate. I feel super grateful that she has agreed to open up about her experience of being laid off during COVID. Kate is an HR professional specializing in employee experiences, culture, and belonging, particularly on a global level. She's also an avid hiker, coffee lover, entrepreneur, and a van enthusiast, all rolled up into one, which we'll get into a little bit more later. But first, Kate, welcome to the podcast, and thank you so much for being here and being open to talk about your experience.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to share and to share with the community as well.
Great. So let's dive right in. So I've been asking everyone a similar question, and that is, when did you start to hear about COVID? You know, where were you? What did you originally think of it? What was sort of going in your mind as you started to learn about this new thing, let's call it?
So I was actually, interestingly enough, traveling a lot in early 2020. So in January of 2020, I was in Singapore and Japan, and then I started the year in Europe in Berlin, where I was living, then flew to Singapore and Japan, back to Berlin, and then spent some time back in Asia, in Indonesia, and then also in India, and then flew to Australia. So that was all January, February. I don't actually recall the first moment I heard about COVID, but I think when I started to really realize that it was a thing that we were dealing with on a more global level and perhaps seriousness level was when I was in Japan, and you could drastically see the difference in flights because they had just canceled all incoming and outgoing flights to China. That would have been, I think it was December or January 26th or something like that. So towards the end of January. And at that point, I think naively, I still thought it was like an Asia-specific thing. My only real kind of reference point was dealing with SARS. And at the time, you know, SARS was big in Toronto, and then it kind of spread a little bit to other countries, but was largely localized in a few spots. And so I think at the time I thought naively that probably we could do the same with COVID, and then that rapidly became not the case. So throughout February, you know, there was questions of like, should we still be traveling? Is this, and consensus was yes. Like I remember landing in Australia, which was for a work trip, and getting an email that said no more work travel, but we had just gotten to Australia with my colleague from Canada. And it was like, do we stay? Do we leave? And work said stay. So we stayed, but that rapidly changed. And I think that was really when I started to realize that things were getting serious, was then when Australia was limiting incoming and outgoing flights, countries where all of my flights got canceled multiple times a day. I was getting emails that like this leg of a trip had been canceled, that leg of a trip had been canceled. This country was now quarantining people. So I think when I really realized it was a big deal was like a lot of people, it was probably early March.
Wow. Yeah. And so you went to Australia. I mean, I know the answer to this question, but can you share with everyone how long you ended up being in Australia for?
Yeah, so I was in Australia and I had about a week and a half of work things planned. And then I've always wanted to go to Australia. So I had taken 2 weeks of vacation. I was there with my partner and we were going to drive a van from Melbourne to Brisbane. And then I was going to fly back to Germany and he was going to continue on and drive the van up to Cairns. We made it to Brisbane, but that's when Australia started to go into full lockdown. And at that point, we made the decision to ride out the ever so, I guess what's the word, infamous, we're going to work from home for 2 weeks.
Oh, how naive we were.
Exactly. So we decided to stay put in Australia because we were so far, there were no direct flights to Canada or anywhere in Europe anymore. And so it seemed super risky to try to transit through other countries that were getting hit quite hard with COVID. And at this point, it was really blowing up in Germany, so I wasn't super keen to get back there. Canada had banned all direct flights, and I didn't think I could travel through the US at the time. So we kept trying to book flights, and everything kept getting canceled. So we just kind of got an Airbnb. We'd allow ourselves a couple hours a day of like look up flights, read the news, check if we can get anything, and then just go back to trying to live somewhat of a normal life. We were really lucky in that we got stuck in an awesome spot. We were in Noosa in Queensland, I think it is. I don't even remember if that's bad. But we were in Noosa. We were close to the beach, so we were allowed to go for walks. You could go outside for exercise. It was sunny, so that was really nice. And we were together, which was awesome. Eventually, we found out that I would be allowed to transit through the US, so we got a Virgin Atlantic flight from Brisbane to LA, and then I flew LA to Toronto, and then I spent a couple months in Toronto before finally flying back to Germany in July of 2020. So all in all, I left Berlin in February of 2020, expecting to be gone for about 5 weeks, and I was gone for like 4 months. So and we were still working from home.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
So when you got back to Germany, and you were working from home, what was, you know, your work environment like? Like, did you see these layoffs coming? What was your timeline from when you got back to Germany to when you actually got laid off?
So it was about a month, I think. And it was pretty awful, to be honest with you. I had gotten a smaller sized apartment in Germany because, you know, my plan was to live in Europe, to travel, to go to the office, to just not be home a whole lot. And then I had, it was a very cozy apartment, but there was not a lot of extra space. And not speaking German well, if at all, I didn't really have a whole lot of connection outside of, you know, screen time. So I spent a lot of time alone in my apartment trying to focus on work while everything just kind of felt like it was blowing up in so many other ways. You know, there was a lot of working in the diversity and belonging space as well as culture. There was a lot going on with the Black Lives Matter movement and protests across North America, which was huge. And then also just on a personal level, you know, watching that is incredibly emotional and kind of coming to terms with your own feelings and like biases that you've lived with your whole life, like starting to educate yourself on this. So it's just a really heavy and difficult time, I think, for everyone. But then also I had a pretty hard time. And then, yeah, I don't think honestly anyone really saw the layoffs coming. I was pretty blindsided. And I've since learned that there was about 50 to 60 people that were laid off at the same time as me. And most of the people felt exactly the same way. So it was an interesting layoff in that there was not any sort of warning or like performance issues or like potential hinting at downsizing or anything like that. It kind of came out of the blue. So yeah, there was pretty much zero. I was really unprepared. So that was a tough one.
Yeah, totally. As yeah. Most people are too, right? Like no one really expects to ever get laid off. And that's something that I wanted to also clarify too with everyone who's listening is that being laid off is not the same thing as being fired, right? So being laid off is usually due to bad luck and actually reasons related to the business, not to your own performance. Right. So it's not being laid off is not something that you did. It's a business decision and relating to the company itself. And so that's something that I wanted to really clarify for everyone listening, because people immediately think that being laid off and being fired is the same thing. And it is completely not. Right.
Mm-hmm. Totally. And it feels really different because there isn't really much to reflect on. I personally have never been fired or laid off before. So this whole thing was new. But the feeling of like, there's nothing I could have done to have changed it necessarily. It didn't feel like there was conversations that had happened that, you know, if I had behaved differently, if I had done this differently, yeah. I'm not really sure what would have happened. It honestly almost just felt like there was something somewhere and someone said, we need to let some people go. And someone just said, all right, pick some names out of a hat, and then did that. It did seem like teams that were in a bit of a flux of deciding where they fit within the company, which makes sense, I guess, with the pandemic. But I think in terms of the work that I was doing, there was a lot to be focused on, but it just didn't work out. So.
And can you walk us through what typically happens when you're laid off? You know, are you given any kind of severance or compensation package? Is this negotiable? Like, what should someone know in the event that they are ever faced with this unfortunate circumstance?
Yeah, for sure. So I think that I've learned a lot since then. And what I would say is read your job contracts. Like, every job contract would have a termination clause in there, and they vary greatly by country. So wherever you are employed, whatever country you're in, whatever your employment status is, it will impact what your termination clause is. So I would make sure that you are very aware of what that is, just from a, even if you are in love with your job, everyone is fantastic, you don't see anything like this ever happening to you, educating yourself on what your rights are is always so important. So I would say that, definitely figure out what your specific circumstance is. From there, I think most permanent employees in most countries are entitled to some form of severance. And even in places like the US, I think where severance isn't as common, a lot of more progressive companies will offer severance just to be like a supportive employer, especially because a lot of the time layoffs are done out of great regret for the company, even because they have to, they just don't have enough money to pay people anymore, or they're downsizing entire departments. So they don't want people to be harmed or, you know, negatively impacted to the point where they would have to like give up a house or sell a kidney or something drastic. And severance is designed to support you in your job search while you look for something new. So a lot of places will give a couple weeks and stuff like that. So I will say that if you're going to get laid off, Germany is a fantastic country for it to happen to you in, because they have incredible laws surrounding employee protections. So that was really nice. They're also incredibly German in their practicality with these laws. So one thing to be aware of is, in Germany specifically, you have up to 3 weeks from the day that you get your notice of termination to contact a lawyer and file something against your company. So that's really important to keep in mind. So if this happens, you know, it can be pretty common to just want to like disengage or go do something else entirely, but it might be important in the area that you're in to make sure that you're acting quickly and filing responses or that kind of thing. I think it's also really common for HR professionals to push people to agree to severance agreements in a conversation. Like, they will present it to you like it is non-negotiable and that you mm-hmm. have to agree to this very thing. It's kind of similar to job contracts in that it is negotiable to a certain extent. Obviously, it's a little bit harder in a lot of regards, but knowing your rights and talking to a lawyer to help you find some of those things can be really, really helpful. So I would actively advise anyone against accepting a severance agreement in the actual termination conversation. It's always a good idea to seek external advice and have a professional tell you what your rights are, because unfortunately, a lot of companies will just try to get away with paying you as little amount as possible mm-hmm. and making it easy on themselves. So that was really important. I think another thing that's really worth calling out is that one thing I'll carry forward with me for every other negotiation I ever have with a job contract is to negotiate the terms of my termination before I'm employed. So most job contracts, people think, oh, I should negotiate my salary or like my vacation days or bonuses. You should also look at what are the terms of those, that termination, and try to negotiate that from the beginning. So yeah. It will probably say that they'll give you a week, maybe 2 weeks for every year of service. You can try to negotiate that to be more. And honestly, that's probably a really great thing to negotiate on at the beginning of your employment, because no one goes into an employment thinking that they're going to terminate it, right? So an employer might be more likely to say, yeah, sure, we'll give you 3 weeks for every year of service, or a flat rate for every year, or whatever it may be that you would like. But it's a really great way to just protect yourself and know what you're agreeing to from the very beginning of your employment, because this really can happen at any time to anyone. So
absolutely. Those are fantastic points to keep in mind, especially to know your rights and to, like you said, protect yourself, right? You know, you can get so excited about a new job and thinking about salary, benefits, potential stock options, whatever, you know, your future company is offering you. But none of us, like you said, think about ending the job before you even have accepted it, right? So, but it's an important aspect.
A lot of those termination agreements will also have notice periods as well. So if you decide to leave your role, and your job and the company, what does that look like? So even to that point, just knowing your rights and knowing what you're getting into is so important from the beginning.
Mm-hmm. Because in Germany, the notice period is quite long, isn't it? Isn't it like 2 or 3 months?
Yeah, it can be. So it's I think you can obviously negotiate that depending on what you want to do. But yeah, you can be held, you know, to 3 months notice. Another thing that I think would be relevant to some of the listeners of your podcast as folks who like to travel and have perhaps relocated. I did relocate for this role. So I moved from Canada to Germany less than a year before, almost exactly a year to the day actually of being laid off. And I really wish in hindsight that I had included a clause about if my termination was coming from my employer, that they would have to pay to relocate me back to Canada. They did tell me that my severance took this into account, but it did. I mean, if anyone who's moved internationally understands, it's such an expensive thing. It costs so much money. And because my company had paid for it the first time around, there were things that I had moved and relocated that I probably wouldn't have if it was just me doing it on my own. So I had to cover those costs or deal with that on my own and make those decisions. So I think that's another thing to consider if you're negotiating an international job contract that requires you to relocate, is to consider what the company would be responsible for if they do decide to terminate the employment.
Yeah.
And making sure you're covered.
Absolutely. That's a really great point. Mm-hmm. So after you were let go, how did you pivot and what was your game plan once you were fun employed, let's say?
So my game plan was, basically I had a couple weeks where I was just really confused, didn't know what to do or how to focus, like if I should stay in Germany, if I should leave, what was going on. Fortunately, my partner was with me, which was really nice. So we decided to go on an Alps road trip and basically take a month off from not working.
Life.
Yeah, exactly. There was a couple of things going on with lawyers at the time, but there was really no need to be in Berlin. And COVID restrictions had lessened a little bit in Europe. So we were able to drive a van from Berlin down through the Alps, through Austria, Italy, Switzerland, Liechtenstein, and then back into Austria and Germany. So we took a full month and did that, and it was amazing. There were definitely moments on the trip where I would have like a total freak out of like, what am I doing? What is my life? This is terrible. But overall, it was such a good experience. And in hindsight, like one of the best trips of my life. So yeah, I know that wasn't possible for a lot of people during COVID who were laid off, because maybe you got laid off and then, you know, you couldn't go anywhere, which was a huge bummer, but that would be my advice. I mean, it might be, like just do something that makes you feel really good. It doesn't have to be a crazy trip or something, but that self-care thing is really important. And I think that reminder that this isn't about you necessarily is really, really big. I struggled with that quite a bit, because you do honestly feel like a failure. Like it does feel really shitty to be told that you're no longer wanted somewhere, but it's also an opportunity to grow and to change. And for me, in hindsight, I kind of realized that I was really not happy at the company, and there was a lot of things that were making me very frustrated with working there. So it was ultimately the best move. And in the grand scheme of things, I got severance, which was really nice. Instead of, if you do quit, you often likely don't get severance. So that was really nice. Yeah. And that money allowed me the time to travel, to do some stuff, work on a couple projects, and then return to the workforce in a job that I really wanted. So that was really good.
So vans keep coming up. There's a common theme here, a van trip in Australia, and then a van trip throughout Europe. What happened after that fun time driving around Europe, and where did you go afterwards, and what did you do?
Yeah, so we left Berlin in November of 2020 and went to the US, where my partner Avery is from, and we bought a van, a cargo van that was an electrician's van, and we converted it. We took 3 months and converted it into a livable camper, tiny home on wheels.
The perfect, which, honestly, pandemic activity.
Exactly. It was kind of just, we wanted a project. We needed something to do. We loved vans. And we just thought, hey, if not now, then when? You know, international travel was so limited. So it was a really good time to just focus on it, go all in on the project and build this little tiny home on wheels, which was really fun.
And you guys did everything yourself, right? And how did you learn to refurbish a van? Did you use YouTube? Like, what was your learning experience like?
We joke that it was YouTube University. So we watched hours and hours and hours of YouTube videos. We had also been really interested in van life since the beginning and had basically now spent 2 months of the past year living in vans. So we largely knew what we wanted and how we wanted our van to work. So I think that's a huge part of the process. But then we found a ton of like van life influencers on YouTube and Instagram. There's a fantastic resource called Far Out Ride, which is actually two engineers, ex-engineers, who quit their tech jobs and built a van. So they approached their van with a very engineer style approach and documented the whole thing. So it's awesome. It's super detailed. They have a blog, they have things, guides you can buy, but they're very practical and have really good applications of how you can install like electrical, solar systems and plumbing in your van, which we used both of. So yeah, we built this little van that is fully insulated. It has a bathroom, it's got shower with hot water, it has solar panels on the roof so we can charge laptops, run a blender, make coffee every day. And then it has, we have heaters. It's, it's pretty cool. So it's a little tiny home.
So cool. Mm-hmm. So what was it like to travel through the US in a van during a pandemic? You know, like what was that like? What were the restrictions like? What was the overall culture feeling?
Oh, man. So we built the van in Florida, which is where Avery has some family. So we had a driveway and access to tools and stuff, which was awesome. And the weather obviously was great. And we built it in January, February. So having, you know, a little bit of sun and some warm weather was really helpful. Florida was an interesting place to be during the pandemic. We tried to avoid most things, but I think like anywhere in the world during COVID, a lot of staying safe was just the precautions that you took yourself. So we did a lot of online grocery delivery. We tried to buy most things off Amazon or do curbside pickup with stuff. And then we just didn't really go to restaurants or do anything where people were still partying or, you know, traveling. And we just avoided those places. So we were fine. We stayed mostly safe. And as we were leaving, Avery's family started to get vaccinated, which was great. And we left Florida at the end of February. So then we drove across to Arizona. So we kind of covered all the southern states and through Texas. And our strategy was mostly just to stay very much off grid, which was the whole point of the van in the first place. We didn't really want to go to cities. So we just looked for national forest land, Bureau of Land Management land, and national parks. And we just camped out. So we would go into towns and cities every couple days to stock up on like water and food. But largely it was just like everyone else. The only time we saw people was when we had to go get food. And yeah, it was interesting, definitely though, seeing the difference in how people were treating the pandemic. Like in Florida, Louisiana, Texas, we were the only people that were frequently wearing masks unless like federally mandated to do so. And then by the time we got to California, people were wearing masks like on the hiking trails outdoors. So it went from one extreme to the other, which was interesting to see. And we were just like happy that, you know, we could be outside for a lot of the pandemic, which was really nice. So eventually we drove the van up to Washington, which is originally where Avery is from, and left it at his parents' house and went back to Berlin to move out of my apartment, which is a decision we made after trying out the van. And we really liked the van. So we figured we didn't need a van and an apartment. So we now only have the van, which is pretty cool.
Awesome. And so you mentioned very pointfully, I think, one of the features of your van allows you to make coffee, which I know you both are big, avid fans of. So not only has this van had a special place in your life during the pandemic, but coffee has as well. So you and Avery started a coffee business together. Did that happen before, during the pandemic? When did that start to come about?
Yeah, so we started a coffee company called Big Year Coffee, actually right at the beginning of the pandemic, which was a terrible time to start a company. Don't recommend it. But actually, while we were stuck in Australia, part of what we were doing was sampling coffee and getting everything ready. So we had the supplier ship things to our Airbnb in Australia, and we could test all of the different coffees and the filters and stuff. And so the Big Year Coffee is basically an adventure coffee company, we like to call it. So we found, when we were traveling, we found these really cool filters that they use a lot in Japan. And it's like a portable pour over filter that fits onto a coffee mug or travel mug. And you just pour hot water through the top of it. And then you have a hot, fresh cup of coffee, no matter where you are. And being people who really like to live in cars, apparently, or camp a lot, we thought this was a really cool product for people who live in any sort of alternative living situation or like to camp and backpack, because the backpacking options for coffee are either kind of bring a lot of equipment to make really good coffee, or you're stuck with like an instant coffee, which is not the most delicious in the morning, I'd say. So we found the coffee. Avery imported it into the US at the beginning of, I guess, June of 2020, and we started to sell it. So yeah, that's basically how it started. And we've recently just actually started roasting all of our own beans in Seattle as well, which has been really cool. And we're learning a lot about coffee roasting, and all of the beans we're importing to are bird-friendly coffee now, which was a huge thing for us. Avery is a biologist and wanted to make sure that the coffee that we're selling is environmentally friendly and full of wildlife and especially birds. So yeah, this basically means that the biodiversity of the forests where the coffee is being grown and the land is respected. So it's trying to avoid like large groupings of one crop that could potentially just decimate the land and not provide biodiversity for animals to live in the spaces. So
that's very cool. And the the name of your business, Big Year Coffee, actually has a relation to birds and migrations and such, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. So Big Year in the birding world is basically a goal of seeing a certain number of birds in a certain area within a predetermined set of time. So Avery was actually attempting to do a big year in 2020. He wanted to see 1,000 different bird species in 1 year. And he was pretty on track with it because we traveled a lot at the beginning of 2020, but obviously it got cut short a little bit. So the coffee company is a bit of a tribute to that. And hopefully he will get to complete his 1,000 birds in 1 year at some point in the next couple of years here, but we'll see.
It's very exciting. Very cool. And how do you guys manage working, living, running a small business all through your van? So you mentioned you get Wi-Fi. How does your Wi-Fi work when you're in your van on the road?
So we just have our cell phone plans at the moment, which so far has worked okay. But it does mean that we have to make sure that we're in a place where that is possible, which sometimes is harder to find, especially in the Western U.S. We were just kind of in Colorado, Utah area, and there is no cell service in the majority of these places. So that's been a bit of an adjustment because we've had to be closer to cities now, which also means it's a little bit harder to find places to sleep and park because we really like to just find places to boondock, which basically means that you're parking for free. And so you don't have to pay for campsites or anything like that. And you're not connected to anything. There are some fantastic options for portable Wi-Fi that are coming out now, I think, especially with the pandemic and a lot more people looking into living slightly alternative to living in expensive cities. van life has become more attractive. So hopefully we'll see some of these options get better and better. Our main issue with the van is that when we're both trying to work, it's just really small. Like, I think anyone who tried to live in a one-bedroom apartment with their partner during COVID can attest to how challenging it can be to be in such a small space. So our van is 74 square feet. So it's quite small. It's about most people's bathrooms, and we're trying to work in it. So that would be, I think, the biggest challenge is just the space. So far, we've been really lucky to not be working together in the van on a day when the weather is very terrible. But if we had inclement weather, I think it would be even harder because one of us couldn't go outside and get away from the other. But yeah, so far it's been pretty cool. And we're planning on living in the van full time this winter and trying to snowboard. We bought snowboard passes, epic passes, to anyone who's familiar with that. So we've got about, I think it's 15 or so resorts in the Western US that we can go to. And so we'll park the van, we'll snowboard, we'll work. We'll just hopefully not freeze. And yeah, that's the plan.
That's exciting. I love that. Mm-hmm. While you've been traveling in your van, working on your small business, you yourself have also been applying for jobs too. Can you walk us through what that experience has been like and sort of what kind of job you were ideally seeking? Because there was a couple of requirements that you really wanted and not to settle on. Can you share what those were?
Yeah, for sure. So I think one thing in hindsight that I will always try to do moving forward is keeping my resume updated. I hadn't applied for a job in over 6 years when I was laid off. So obviously a ton of things had happened and I was left with this sort of sense of like, what did I do? I don't even know what my projects were. I haven't had to build a resume in a very long time. I haven't interviewed. All of those skills felt really, really rusty. So one thing I will do and learn from this is to update my resume, even if it's every like 3 to 6 months. Just go in, add in a couple projects that you did, make sure your contact information, the formatting still feels, you know, new and modern and relevant, because my last template, I think I had like a picture on it and it was like really bad. So I had to start from scratch with my resume. And especially immediately after getting laid off, as we talked about, like your confidence levels are basically like none. Zero. So the last thing you feel like doing is anything relating to that. So especially as a resource for anyone who would really like to just get right back into work, having a resume ready to go so you can start firing that off and getting those experience, like those interviews lined up and those reach outs done, is really important. So yeah. So, and then when I actually really started to look for a job, I was thinking about what I wanted. And unlike a lot of people, I actually really liked working remotely. Despite the German part, those 3 weeks in Germany when I was really stuck inside, the rest of it's been great. I've loved the flexibility, and especially having a partner where we don't have the same citizenship or ability to work in the same country, it's been really helpful for our relationship to be able to travel around a bit more and spend time together, because we can both be kind of flexible with our working arrangements. So remote was one thing I really wanted. I also wanted a company with a mission where I felt like it was something that I really believed in. With my previous company, I really, really I liked the mission of the company and it felt like we were making a difference in the world. But when I started my job search, there were so many companies that were like, we help businesses and customers connect on important topics. And I was like, what? What do you do? Can't figure it out. So in order to help me with you know, a lot of the engagement pieces and just feeling like I was engaged with my job and then inspiring others to be engaged with their job, I really wanted to have that mission. So that was a really big one. And fully remote was another one. So the challenges with applying for fully remote jobs is that you are now also opening up the talent pool to an entire region or potentially the world. So applying for remote jobs became quickly much more challenging than I would have thought. And I think largely it was due to the fact that instead of competing with people within a talent pool of, you know, Toronto or Berlin or Barcelona, you were now competing with all of Europe, all of North America, all of Europe and North America, which is a lot of people. So especially I think during a time with when the Great Resignation was happening and a lot of people were making changes, it was a bit of a more challenging job search than I anticipated, but I'm really happy with where I ended up and where I'm working now. So I'm really happy that I held out, and I did say no to two roles during my search that just didn't feel right, or two of them had flexible work arrangements and one of them wanted individuals to come into the office 2 to 3 times a month, and that just didn't really feel like what I wanted to do. So I did turn down a couple roles, which was really scary to do, because you just feel like, you know, you want a job, someone's offering you a job, you should just take it. But I'm really happy that I stuck it out and tried to find something that was exactly what I wanted. And I think everyone's situation is different and not everyone might have that luxury necessarily, but it was definitely the right choice for me, which was nice.
Yeah, absolutely. If you have the opportunity to really stick to your guns and not settle for something, and you know, you are looking for a truly remote job. And I think both you and I quickly discovered that during your job search, just because a company said it was a remote position didn't necessarily mean that it was truly remote, right? Like you just mentioned, there were companies saying remote, but it was really like a flexible job, and they still required you to go into the office a couple of days a week, which would have anchored you to a particular city and therefore a particular country, when you were indeed looking for something that would allow you complete freedom and to work wherever you want. So yeah, so if you can, stick to your guns, don't settle. I think that is a really important thing. And just be like laser focused on what you want in your next role, and do your best to just stay focused and motivated, because you will go through a roller coaster of emotions, right? Like you mentioned. And just making sure you have a supportive network of people around you to keep encouraging you on the way, right? So
yes, the network was super important. Having friends that just knew what I was going through and that I could vent to every so often was really helpful. I think another thing that happened to me that was helpful to be reminded of, and I think a couple times when I was, you know, not having a great experience, you said to me like, oh, just send an email. Hey, just like stay positive. And I was like, bah, you don't know. but I'm so glad you said those things, because it was really helpful. but I did the job that I actually have now. I was first rejected for automatically after just sending in an online application through their website. And I was really upset, because I thought I had poured my heart and soul into this application and I felt like I was the ideal candidate, which turns out I was, just the applicant tracking system that they used thought I wasn't. So this was a really helpful tip for me. When I built my resume, I didn't run it through any sort of scanners. And basically what had happened is the scanner had pulled a lot of irrelevant information for this specific job. So the recruiter saw it and kind of thought, oh, you don't have the experience we're looking for, and sent off an automatic rejection letter. So
Despite having 6+ years of HR experience?
Yeah, I had, 6 years at this company, but 4 of very relevant experience. And they were looking for, I think, 4 or 5 years of experience. So I was very close. And so I responded to the recruiter and just said, hey, I'm really interested in this company. Can we grab a quick coffee chat to just learn about what roles you're hiring for in the next year? And the recruiter responded very nicely and said they had 15 minutes to have a coffee with me, which I think is like every recruiter's least favorite thing to do, but I'm really glad in this case it worked out. So we had our 15-minute coffee meeting, which actually turned into an hour-long coffee meeting, because once I started talking about my experience, the recruiter was like, oh, holy cow, this is actually very relevant. And I'm so sorry, I don't know how this happened. Let's put you through to an interview, which then evolved into 2 more interviews and then getting hired. So that was something that was really outside my comfort zone. I'm definitely like, when someone says no, thank you, I'm like, okay, great, have a good day, bye. So putting myself out there and actually saying, no, I want this, was something that I was not comfortable with. But again, my network was sort of saying, this is really helpful, you should try. If it's something you want, you know, what's the harm in asking? And they were right. So thank you to my friends.
That's amazing. So when you got your remote job, you were telling me earlier, before we started recording this, about some of the interesting benefits that you got. And so I think that's really helpful for anyone else who's maybe considering a fully remote job that they're, you know, you sometimes assume that because maybe you're a contractor or you're living in a different country, you might not be eligible for certain benefits. But in your case, in your company, there's some actually really interesting ways that they're doing things, if you can share some of that.
Yeah, for sure. So they are trying to really reinvent what employee experience and working for a company is like. We recently just introduced a minimum salary of $80,000 for all employees, which was kind of just largely to make everyone's life better. But it's also helped us create like a transparency model into our salaries. So we were able to actually close the gender pay gap at the company to 0%. So a lot of these things are kind of rooted in like having a really awesome employee experience for people. So I am a contracted employee, so I bill the company every month with for my pay, but they also offer things that most contracted employees don't get, like care benefits, equity options, expense accounts, all of these kind of benefits I thought I might have to give up being a digital nomad. I still get, which has just been so cool and makes me so grateful and really excited. So I think a lot of these employment structures are possible. It's just that either we're still learning about them, especially with this kind of more shift to a more remote or potentially distributed workforce, remote digital nomads, all these different types of employment options. So that can be a really helpful thing also when you're job searching, is to understand what type of job contract you would actually want. Like, do you want to be a full-time salaried employee? I did negotiate a bit more termination into my contract, but that is one thing I think that you will see a huge change on if you are an independent contractor. There's likely not a whole lot of severance or termination notice that would happen. But again, all of these things are up for debate. So if you don't ask, you'll never know. But that was kind of a big learning. So yeah, just understanding that the idea that I had of what an independent contractor agreement looks like is not necessarily correct or the only way that it can is really cool. And just shameless plug, the company is called Field. We're a dating app. And we are hiring, and everyone is fully remote and can work from anywhere for the most part. So yeah, if anyone wants a job, let me know.
We'll include the link below in the show notes.
Yeah, exactly.
Along with all of the other amazing resources that Kate has shared today.
So this is not sponsored.
Not sponsored. She's just passionate about her new job.
It's great. Yeah.
But it's interesting that you pointed out it's important to know what kind of employment offer you're looking for, right? So you yourself mentioned that you're on a contract position right now. Other people want, you know, the full employment if you were in a specific country. And there's so many different options these days. And you've even mentioned that your idea, or the idea that you had about what a traditional contract role would be like, is very different now, right? Because we're in a whole new era of working and working remotely. And just because something starts on a contract doesn't necessarily mean it can't ever evolve into a full-time role. So speaking for myself, when I moved to Spain, I was initially a contractor. And then the company that I work for actually ended up opening an entity within the country. And therefore, I was transitioned to full-time employment. And even if you are a contractor, and let's say you're trying to, apply to a certain company, but they don't like a particular country that you're located in because they don't have an entity there. There's actually so many new solutions, and they're called international payroll solution companies, where they actually offer services to help companies hire talent internationally. So one of these companies called Deel, D-E-E-L, and I'll include a link below as well. But these are really good resources to know, if in fact you are speaking to a company and maybe they're eager to hire you, but unfortunately they don't feel comfortable hiring you wherever you might be in the world because of legality reasons. You know, it might be wise and take a shot in the dark and send them some of these resources, right? And you never know what might happen, because as you've even experienced, you know, there's no harm in sending an email and really fighting for what you want, especially if, you know, this is you truly want to be remote, you want to live abroad, you want to you know, design your own lifestyle. You got to put yourself out there and go after what you want. So there's lots of options these days. There's lots of amazing resources. We'll make sure to include a bunch in the show notes. But yeah, so just wrapping up, looking back upon your very crazy last 18 months or so, what do you think the most memorable moment has been for you during this whole lockdown, pandemic, COVID situation?
I don't know if I could entirely pick one.
Top three.
I feel like there's definitely been phases. Like I kind of went from a phase of really never actually even wanting to work in HR again. I just felt incredibly jaded with the whole profession, to a kind of this like passion for creating experiences for people that were opposite to what I went through. So, I mean, I really hope that I never have to, I don't think any HR professional likes to lay people off or terminate contracts, but I hope that if and when that time comes, I can do it with a little bit more care and empathy than I was shown, which I think was something that took a while to get to. So that was sort of a whole journey. And then the whole van has been really interesting. Like being able to see so much of the US has been really amazing. I think especially I'm Canadian, so you know, we feel like it's kind of close, but the US is absolutely massive and there's so much to see, and the natural beauty was just like really cool. And now I'm really excited to bring the van to Canada and do the same thing. But I think that was a huge learning, and just how much I connect with nature and how much I miss it if I'm not able to. So like even this summer when I came to visit Katie in Barcelona, which was great, there was not a whole lot of nature around all the time. There's some beautiful park, but I just really, really enjoyed being fully off grid and being in the middle of nowhere more frequently than I thought I would have. So that was kind of a whole other journey and experience. And then I think again, just like with my partner and with my friends, like the relationships that we've built through going through all of these journeys together, from, you know, everyone seems to have some sort of COVID story. And I think that you've shared a lot of them through this whole series, but you know, there was canceled weddings, you know, people had babies that haven't even met, you know, their grandparents yet. And now they're meeting toddlers. People have passed away. People have lost loved ones. People have broken up. People have gotten married. And I think throughout all of it, so many relationships have strengthened because we've been able to focus a lot more on what actually matters, which is so cheesy and kind of sounds crazy.
But it
did. Yeah, it did allow, I think, a lot of relationships, and especially with, you know, some of my friends now and my boyfriend partner, like it feels like the 2 years we've been together is a lifetime because we've been through so much. And I think that's a thing for a lot of relationships. So I would say my biggest moments were kind of this like journey of understanding what I wanted my career to look like, and then also what I wanted my life to look like, and then just like strengthening relationships. So it was a really tough 18 months, almost 2 years now. Why are we still have it? This is still happening. But yeah, it was, I think, maybe like the best and the worst, if I could summarize it. So it was the best of the best and the worst of the worst. Totally. But I think it also made the best that much better. So that was nice.
Absolutely. Love that. It's a really great way to phrase it. Well, thank you so much for sharing your story. I really appreciate it. If our listeners would like to connect with you or check out your coffee business, what's the best place to get in touch?
Yeah, so the coffee is Big Year Coffee. And so we're Big Year Coffee on Instagram and bigyearcoffee.com for our website. And then me personally, I'm Kate, K-A-I-T dot Norris on Instagram, if anybody wants to say hello.
Perfect. We'll definitely include those links below.
Yeah. It's the van is all over Instagram. So
yes.
If anyone wants to check out the van.
Awesome. Well, thank you again. And yeah, looking forward to chatting very soon.
Sounds good. Thank you so much. This was great.